Welcome to the 40 and Infertile podcast, where I share with you my fertility journey in my late 30s and 40s while also providing you information to minimize your fertility struggles later in life. Hey everybody, today is all about changing the egg donor and recipient parent experience. There's a lot of discussion about needing a donor, and there's so many things to keep in mind. And I think as this is something that is coming up more and more for people, we certainly have to explore some of the different complexities that arise from, you know, needing this process. And today we really talk about that with Lauren. She's the co-founder of CoFertility, and how her experience really drove her to transform what this process looks like for both donors and recipient parents. She talks about CoFertility's program and how they really stress support, transparency, community, and really building a safe space for both the donor and recipient parent. We talk about their program today. We talk about what it means and what the experience is like for the donor and for the intended parents. And we're really talking about how they're revolutionizing the way families are built. So today's episode will be very, very interesting. I think there's a lot of different things that will come up, and there are certainly things that I learned that I didn't know about. And it's a different way of looking at egg donation. And I think that this is a nice way for people to build relationships and help each other. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Take a listen. And thank you so much to Lauren and CoFertility for joining me today. Just a quick reminder, I am not a physician, and the information provided today is for educational and informational purposes only, and is not a substitute for professional medical advice. So make sure that you consult with your own fertility doctor before choosing any medical therapies that may affect your fertility. Unfortunately, every person's situation is unique, and it is vital that you discuss your own personal situation with your fertility doctor to decide what is the best course of action for you. All right, we're back with another episode, and today I'm so excited. We have Lauren, one of the co-founders of CoFertility, and we have a lot to talk about today. So thank you so much for being here, Lauren.
I'm so happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So one of the exciting things, and I'm not quite sure how I found you. I think it was, you know, one of these Instagram things, like a lot of the people that I meet, it comes up like, you know, this, you might like this. And so I started to explore, and I kind of saw the message that you guys were changing the experience of egg donors and the landscape of egg donor and recipient parent relationships. And I found that to be fascinating. And I really wanted to learn more about it. And so I'm really excited to dive in today to kind of learn more about what you guys are doing and how different it is from traditional egg donor and recipient parent relationships. So thank you so much for breaking this down for us.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, let's first start about your own personal journey, because you have a little, you have a story to bring with this that kind of helped you bring this to life. So yeah, could you share that with us?
Yes, don't we all though, right? Like in this space, it's always like, so what's your story? Yeah. Because for so many of us, I think that's like what got us interested and hooked and sort of taking an experience and really channeling it into something that hopefully can create change or help others not go through some of what we went through. So All three of us as co-founders have gone through very personal and sort of complicated journeys with our fertility. And I'm sure at some point, both Arielle and Hallie would be more than happy to tell you theirs. But my journey goes back about 5 or so years ago. I had a pain in my side. And after a bunch of tests and a diagnostic surgery, ultimately found out that I had masses growing throughout my abdomen and was diagnosed with an incredibly rare abdominal disease, one of 154 people or fewer than 200 people on the planet who have this disease, and was told that I may not have a biological child. And so I started to look into, you know, what my options were, right? Like, how do I navigate this disease? But also, like, how will I have a family someday? And I looked into donation because I knew that was sort of a thing on the table. And ultimately I was very fortunate that my sister decided to freeze her eggs and donate them to me after what I saw out there was just pretty disappointing. Mm-hmm. It felt really antiquated, and I'm sure we'll have more time to talk about what about the industry I saw. But, you know, my sister froze her eggs, donated them to me. She's the best. Mm-hmm. And I got to go through, you know, two major surgeries after that, knowing that I had those eggs waiting for me in case I needed them. Years later, you know, overcame my disease and recovered from my surgeries, and surprisingly was able to get pregnant without using my sister's eggs. But, you know, peace of mind that came from knowing they were there, even while not, you know, a true insurance policy, to me really meant the world. But it got my wheels turning on the egg donation space as a whole. It's really mm-hmm. at the crux of how so many people build their family today, and yet so little innovation or change had been happening in the space. And so when I teamed up with Hallie Tecco and Ariel Spiegel, it was just so clear that we needed to build something in this space together to create change.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, like, egg donor space that you kind of went into, because I've dipped my toe in that space, because I've had many a conversation with my own fertility doctors that told me, like, hey, you may need to look into egg donors. This may be something in your future. So I kind of, you know, was curious. So I've, you know, gone out to, I got a list of egg donor banks. I don't think I looked into any agencies, but I went to banks. And it's a very surreal for people who have not experienced this or been to it. It's a very interesting experience. You go to this website and you put in criteria that you have for your donor and you get this populated list of pictures of women and then very specific demographics, you know, like age, height, ethnicity, a little bit of educational background. And it was a very interesting experience. I just felt like I was kind of going through this catalog of faces and then, you know, asking myself, does she look like me? Should I, like, what am I looking for? What would be a good donor? Like, it just felt very, I don't know if sterile is the right word, but kind of, you know. So what was your experience like?
Well, you know, I personally am someone who wanted a Jewish donor if I needed to go the donor route, and found that it was just like hard to find that, right? Yes. And, you know, some people it's about physical attributes for someone. Other people it might be about heritage specifically. Others, and we hear this a lot lately, it's really about feeling like they could have a connection with the donor, or, you know, we hear a lot like, oh, we were looking for someone we felt we could be friends with, right? Mm-hmm. And I actually, I really love that mentality. So it's different for everybody what they're looking for. And we actually often are like, intended parents want a donor that is as unique as they are, right? Like, bottom line, doesn't mean necessarily the same as them, but unique, right? And so, you know, traditional egg donation, if I can just, you know, I could talk about this all day of what I think is sort of broken in this space, but I think, you know, it comes down to a few issues. But the first issue I have is that there's a lot of stigma around egg donation. And I think that that stigma is largely rooted in the cash compensation model. So for people who don't know, whether you're working with an egg bank or with a traditional agency, in addition to paying for the costs of, like, retrieving the eggs, which unfortunately for women is, it's a lot more expensive to retrieve eggs than it is sperm, because the process is very different. But in addition to the cost of the actual expense of the retrieval, traditionally cash compensation is exchanged and given to the donor in sort of exchange for her time and experience in doing this. We think that's part of the problem, right? So, and that cash compensation can vary. It can be anywhere from like $8,000 to, I just heard of last week, a case of $95,000, depending on how hard, how hard it is to find the donor you're looking for. So, like, you know, an Ivy League education could get you, you know, could cost more, right, for a donor, or specific heritage that's harder to find donors for can warrant more cash compensation. Our perspective is that that cash compensation feels transactional and sort of icky for everybody involved. So that's the donor, that's the intended parent, and that's the donor-conceived person down the line, right? So there was a Harvard study done of donor conceived people last year that said 62% of donor conceived adults think that the exchange of money for donation is wrong. And over 40% said that the fact that money was exchanged in their own conception was something they found disturbing, right?
Oh, so that's interesting.
That study just came out in 2021 though, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't – me saying this is not like, ugh, like donor compensation should have never existed, right?
Right, right.
We didn't know better, right? And we didn't have that data. And we were doing the best that we could. And I say we as like a society, right?
Yes.
To help people build their families. But now that this information is there and this research is available to us, I think it's on us as a society, right? To do better mm-hmm. and to evolve and to learn from that. Mm-hmm. And so if we know that donor conceived people struggle with that, or mm-hmm. in some cases, we've actually heard from the US Donor Conceived Council that some people who are donor conceived actually feel that they need to like live up to the cost that their parents paid their donor in compensation. And that was something that truly broke my heart, right? So how do we avoid that? And how do we do better? We think by removing the cash compensation entirely. And so our model, instead of cash compensation, we give women the opportunity to freeze their own eggs for free if they donate half of those eggs retrieved. So they keep half of the eggs and half go to the intended parents. And we think really that like because – and we've talked to a lot of donors and a lot of the women in our program have said to us, I always thought egg donation would be an amazing thing to do for another family, but I was really off put by the cash, so I never did it. Like they felt that it was like selling their eggs. And with our model, they're like, wow, I can like – preserve my own future fertility, or in the event that I have infertility and later in life, I can protect against that and help another family. And so we're sort of removing that stigma, because the stigma that's like turning women off of egg donation is a missed opportunity, right? It's discouraging women who like otherwise might have helped a family grow. It also leaves intended parents with fewer options and resources, but it especially hurts the LGBTQ community that's relying on egg donation for their family building. What else do I think is broken? You had mentioned, you know, how antiquated and sort of disappointing the experience of like looking at these profiles can feel like. I think the other example that's worth mentioning is that, you know, at least you were looking at websites that had photos, right? Sometimes some clinics will send women a spreadsheet. Sorry, not women. They'll send intended parents, sorry, a spreadsheet of women where every row on the spreadsheet is a different woman who is a donor with basic stats about her, like her age, her height, her hair color, her eye color, and like that's all you get when we know there's like so much more about a person than just those physical attributes. So knowing their values, their backgrounds, their personalities is something that like most intended parents really want when they're choosing a donor. But just generally, I think lack of diversity and just adequate options for intended parents is something that needs to change in the industry as a whole.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, as far as I think there are a couple of things that people have talked about, or at least that I've heard recently about kind of the traditional egg donation system. I've heard recently that there have been some, how do I put this, unique ads seeking donors. And that these ads really focus on that cash compensation portion of it. And I think that adds to what you were saying earlier, it feeling kind of icky, it feeling like, you know, I've had a couple of people tell me about some of these ads they've seen on TikTok and, you know, about making the egg donation kind of more about that cash compensation, which I think kind of makes it harder sometimes for intended parents to also feel good about, you know, getting into this space, because, you know, a lot of people who do need to come into the space, it's because they have to be able to build their families, to expand their families.
Right.
And when you hear these stories about these ads targeting women and using things like Gucci bags and stuff like that,
you
know, using their egg donation to buy their next Gucci bag or something like that. It does feel a little
horrible,
you know, transactional, like you said.
It's exploitation, I think, right? It's like, I don't know. We we talk so much with the women on our platform. We call them split members because, mm-hmm. you know, they're participating in our split program, about what donation truly means, right? And mm-hmm. about the decision that they're making and how, you know, we really encourage disclosed donation. That mm-hmm. does not mean that they will have a relationship with the intended parents or a relationship mm-hmm. with the donor conceived person down the line, but it mm-hmm. does mean that they're open to sharing their contact information. So if that child someday grows up and has questions or wants to know about their conception or learn more about their genetics, that is an option for them. And that's why we encourage disclose. But we think that the education and, you know, informed consent and taking it seriously is so important. And to see ads with a Gucci bag or ads that are like, you know, with the Eiffel Tower in the background, they're like, want to go to lunch, you know, in Paris and not worry about how much the check is, like donate your eggs. Like, that makes me sick, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's time that not be the case.
Yeah. Well, and there's another unique thing that your program offers for both the intended parent and the donors, right? And I think for you guys, I feel like it's a unique blend of kind of egg bank / agency kind of all rolled together into one, because both the donor and the recipient parents get to have a say. And then there is this whole matching process, right? Can you talk about that?
I can. So yeah, I think so with a traditional egg bank, the eggs are frozen and they're waiting there to be matched with intended parents. And there are cases more often than not that the woman who donated doesn't even know that those eggs have been, you know, sent to intended parents, or whether or not there's a baby born or anything like that. Sometimes she doesn't even get the records from her retrieval to like know how many eggs were retrieved, which is like heartbreaking to me, because we think any sort of care interaction with a healthcare provider is something where someone should be treated as a patient deserving to know the outcome of the experience. So that's important to us in one case. But back to the match. So for us, the intended parent first finds the donor that they're interested in and excited about. And then we share some information about the intended parent or parents with the donor and give her the opportunity to say, yes, I'm interested, or no, I'm not. And as of today, we've never had someone say, no, they're not interested, but it is important to us to give them that choice. And then the other piece of it is that we give them the opportunity to meet. Mm-hmm. So we first ask the intended parents, like, do you want to meet this donor? And it's up to them to suggest it or not. So far, everyone has met pre-match, or, you know, as part of that match process. We had one match meet in person for brunch, right? And not implying that they will have a long-term relationship or that they will be a regular part of each other's lives, but so that they can feel comfortable and say, like, yes, this is the person whose genetics I want to like live on through our child, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say, you know, needing an egg donor is not, we're not saying that should be like, you know, exciting or amazing mm-hmm. for someone, right? Like, we get how hard that is, whether you are on this journey because you've experienced infertility or even, you know, a gay dad, right? Like, we're not mm-hmm. saying that like, this is going to be the best decision of, you know, the best thing you've ever experienced, right? We know how hard this is, but we see our role in it as like, being an empathetic, human-centered approach to doing it. It doesn't have to be the worst thing in the world either, mm-hmm. right? And so mm-hmm. we want to make it more positive. And I think having this mutual match is something that really helps with that.
So let's kind of walk through the process a little bit. So if someone is interested in using your service to find an egg donor, they reach out to you, what happens?
Yeah. So two things can happen. One, you can get on a call with my team as a starting point. It may be with me. It may be with someone else on my team our team is really incredible and just so motivated by our mission and what we're doing. Or, you know, the intended parent can actually start just going to cofertility.com/family and clicking find my match. So we do not charge for intended parents to look at our profiles, which is different than a lot of the players in the space. We don't want there to be a barrier to entry in that regard. So you can browse, like, literally right now, you could sign up for an account. It takes like 2 minutes to sign up. maybe a few more minutes to give us some information about yourself. But, you know, you can start browsing. And then if you see a donor that you're excited to match with, you place a $500 deposit down. And that way we know that you're serious about it. We like really take seriously reaching out to our split members or our donors with information that they've been matched, right? If we didn't take that deposit, we would, you know, give them false hope and give them a bad experience. So for us, it's really about making sure we're managing expectations appropriately on each side. Mm-hmm. But after that, we reach out to them with information about the intended parent. We move forward with what, you know, that initial match process. And then we work with the intended parent to decide the right logistics of the match for them. Mm-hmm. In some cases, we find that intended parents have a really strong or incredible relationship with their reproductive endocrinologist, and they want to do the cycle at their clinic, which we fully support and are happy to help make happen. In that case, sometimes the donor may need to travel depending on where she's located. In other cases, and again, it might depend on the donor's like lifestyle or schedule, we'll work with everyone involved to do the retrieval or part of the egg freezing cycle at a clinic close to the donor. So it's done on a case-by-case basis with our member advocate team to figure out the logistics of making this whole thing happen. Mm-hmm. But it's fairly straightforward once the location of where this is happening takes place. Mm-hmm. But then the donor goes in for extensive screening and testing and things like that to make sure that it is a great fit for everybody involved. And then there is a legal agreement that is signed between the donor and the intended parent, articulating a number of things, including the relationship that they intend to have, like we discussed. Mm-hmm. And after that, they move forward with the cycle. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the cycle, the eggs are divided into two. If there's an odd number of eggs, the intended parent gets the extra mm-hmm. egg. But otherwise, very, very straightforward.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So I have so many questions right now. So when you pay the fee as a recipient parent, so you're paying for the donor for their eggs to be frozen. Are you paying for their annual storage and all that? So or what are you?
We have a partnership where it's 10 years of storage, long-term storage. So mm-hmm. we're able to get a great rate that is used for the donor's half of the eggs. Mm-hmm. The intended parents, as you can imagine, are very eager to create embryos and to move forward on that side of things. But that storage is basically instead of cash compensation for the donor, right? So mm-hmm. it's a fraction of what you would pay compared to cash compensation. Mm-hmm. And we also have a baby guarantee. So I should mention that.
Oh, okay.
On the coordination fee, which is what we charge to sort of manage the entire process, because it is, as I said, it's very match specific, right? There's a lot of logistics. There's a lot of back and forth with everybody involved. That coordination fee comes with a baby guarantee, meaning that for, you know, if, and we hope that this never happens, but of mm-hmm. course, you know, this is not a perfect science, right? So say the donor doesn't meet the initial screening standards that are required to like move forward with the process, or say, we have like different scenarios that could happen. If that's the case, we will rematch you at no additional coordination fee, or we will refund that coordination fee. Mm-hmm. So we can't, you know, refund medical expenses that have already been paid, but mm-hmm. we feel the least we can do is on the coordination fee. And this truly came after we studied like dozens of policies from other egg banks and agencies. Mm-hmm. And we designed what we believe to be the like most intended parent friendly policy out there.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great, because there are a few other things that kind of come to mind. One of them is what happens, because, you know, me being having an Asian background, tough to find Asian egg donors. There are a few out there, but it's not like a huge selection of them.
We and have like you should come check it
I'm
out.
I'm getting there.
Okay. And then, no pressure. When you're ready. No pressure.
And then with your background, you were looking for Jewish donors and there weren't a lot there. So let's say we're going through the co-fertility website and we can't find someone with our background or anything like that. So what happens if we're in that space?
Yeah. First step is like, please send my team an email. support@cofertility.com. We would love to hear specifically what you are looking for. And, you know, especially if it's not something you're seeing reflected in our, you know, platform already, let us know what you're looking for. We have an enormous pipeline of women who are currently working through their application right now. Sometimes it takes them a really long time to fill it out, just how much we ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. We want to know their, you know, tons of medical history, personality, motive, like so much. And so what we found is if we hear from an intended parent that they're looking for something specific, we will actually reach out specific, like to the women that are working on their profile who meet that criteria and say, we have intended parents who we think would be really excited to match with you if you finish your application. And that has like really moved them through the process. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to match intended parents just because of that tactic alone. So I don't like to do that with women that are, you know, in the pipeline that we don't have intended parents for, because yeah. I know this is a, you know, it's a, it takes time and we don't want to rush people. But if we have intended parents that we think could be a good fit, we let them know. And it really is motivating for them to get there faster. Like, wow, I could actually do this. I can imagine it. Like mm-hmm. it feels more real when they yeah. know there's someone looking. So that's one thing. But also having us be on the lookout for you specifically is something we're more than happy to do.
Mm-hmm. And then is there a quantity limit? So let's say a donor, let's say they're, you know, they have low AMH or something, they have low
yeah.
quantity, and you don't figure that out until you start the cycle, yeah. but both sides are still willing to proceed, you know. And if the donor wants to do an extra round, or if the intended parent wants another round or wants additional eggs for siblings, sure. how does that work?
Yeah. So after the initial appointment where like blood work and ultrasound and antral follicle count, all that stuff is done, you know, the doctor, the intended parent's physician has to sign off that this is a good candidate for this. And so okay. they won't if it's not a good candidate. And we wouldn't recommend that either. And so we'll work with you to figure out, you know, what the best option is at, you know, at that point. Should you find another match or should you proceed? The other thing we love to ask up front with our split members or donors is, you know, are you interested in doing a second cycle? And so many of them are, especially when, you know, many of our donors are women who have prioritized their education or their training or their career, right? So some of them are like, oh, well, you know, I would love to have three children someday, but I'm currently a resident physician and I'm not going to have kids until I'm like 36, right? And yeah. so they can, and we work with them to understand the math around mm-hmm. that, right? Well, if you're starting to have kids later on and you want a certain number of children, we help them plan for that, right? So mm-hmm. that person that I just made up yes. is somebody who might benefit from doing two cycles, right? Mm-hmm. And so by knowing that up front, it sort of gives intended parents like comfort knowing like, okay, we can do this for more than one cycle. But we do really recommend like seeing how one turns out, right? Yeah. Like you don't have to commit to doing a second cycle. And that's one of my pain points when I see clinics like saying like, well, how many cycles do you want? It's like, well, how yeah. do you know until you see the outcome?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
we recommend seeing how that first cycle goes, knowing in the back of your mind whether or not the donor or the intended parents like want to do or are open to a second cycle, but waiting to see the outcome first.
Mm-hmm. So it really is a very mutually beneficial experience so that both yeah. sides can have a conversation about what all this means. So if the intended parent would like to have a sibling, you can go back and have this conversation with the donor and say, hey, are you open to
yes.
doing a second cycle? Because we would love to have, you know, if they
better for both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
we had, go ahead. Sorry.
No.
I was going to say we had one intended parent. He said, you know, Lauren, your model, this is it's collateral benefit. Right. Mm-hmm. It can help both sides in a way that feels really good, right? You're helping mm-hmm. yourself, but you're helping someone else. And mm-hmm. I think the intended parent and the donor can both feel that.
Mm-hmm. And if the donor feels like, let's say an intended parent is happy with their batch of eggs, yep. you know, and they have built the family that they want and they're happy. And
sure.
then the donor, if they are feeling like, you know, maybe I'd like to have a second batch, do they stay yeah. in the, I don't want to call it a system, but kind of, do they yeah. stay available? Let's say that available yeah. for another set of intended parents to come in and say, hey, we're yeah. open to a cycle.
It's, it's up to the donor. We do give her the opportunity to rematch with another family if that's something she's interested in, while keeping in mind that ASRM recommends no one do more than 6 cycles. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen, you know, a number close to that, but yeah, it is up to the donor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really amazing. And you have donors all across the country?
Yeah. Yeah. Everywhere.
So, because we talked a little bit about this earlier, where let's say we have someone in, I'm in California, so I'm going to say California.
Yeah.
And we have someone in New York, right?
Yeah.
And there's a match there. How does that work? So could you ship eggs from, like, frozen eggs from
New York?
There's
a lot of ways it could work. So you can ship frozen eggs. You also can ship frozen sperm. Or the donor could travel, or the intended parent could travel. So, you know, I'm thinking of one match, and you said New York and LA. So, of course, it made me think of this one match where the donor, or you said New York and California. So, we have a match where the donor is in LA and the intended parents are in New York. And they decided, just based on the donor's very busy schedule, that they're going to do the cycle in LA. And, you know, the intended parent will travel to fertilize the egg, you know, so that it can truly be, you know, a fresh scenario. And then they will test and freeze embryos. Whereas we have some other cases where the donor is going to travel to the intended parent's clinic and be there for, or maybe do some remote monitoring at first, but do the actual retrieval and be in town for the retrieval cycle. And then there's a scenario where we have intended parents shipping sperm to the donor's location, right? So there's so many ways that this can happen, but eggs, sperm, embryos are shipped all over the country all the time.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the donor goes, because I think the perspective of your company is very unique in that, you know, you're finding donors who are really feeling altruistic about what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? They really want to help another family.
Yeah.
And so do you think that that comes from the way you find your donors, or, you know, how do you feel like that's different than our, you know, the traditional egg banks that we have and, you know, that experience?
Well, I think it comes down to a few things. I think the cash compensation is part of it, right? Like if these are women who are not doing, who are often, I think, off-put by cash compensation, right? Mm-hmm. So I think by nature of the model, that's part of what's interesting to them. But I think the fact that our company and our brand is about so much more than just, like, you know, the actual outcome, right, of, like, freezing your eggs. It's about fertility education and proactive, you know, measures to preserve your fertility. And we do a lot with, we have an incredible medical advisory board who they host, you know, Q&As and webinars, and we have a private community for the women that are joining our programs. And so they get to really get a full experience where they're not just like, okay, like I'm signing up to freeze my eggs. They're learning about their fertility for the first time, right? Like I think years ago, like it's finally, thankfully, part of the conversation.
Yes,
that infertility is very common, and more people know about it. But that conversation, frankly, is really only happening between people in their 30s and 40s.
Right.
And so we see our role as like, how do we have this conversation with people in their 20s so that they can take action when they're in their late 20s, early 30s to like plan and take proactive measures and understand what they're getting into, right? Egg freezing is not an insurance policy. It's not a perfect science. It's not a guarantee. However, it is a great backup option to have should you experience infertility later in life. And so we're really upfront with that education. So I think we're able to be that resource for people and help support them in a lot of different ways that speaks to them differently than what else is out there in the space.
Yeah. And I don't think, because I remember when I was in college, and this was like 20 years ago, but there were ads for egg donors when I was in college. And this was 2000-ish, you know, when I was in college. And there were ads for egg donors. But there wasn't really, I don't think, like you said, a conversation about fertility. Like, I remember seeing these ads in my 20s, or, you know, late teens, early 20s, and thinking like, oh, I don't think I could do that. That seems like a lot. But then not really fully understanding what all of that meant and what that could mean for me and what that could mean for someone else. So I love that you guys have some of these resources available for the egg donors. And, you know, are there any other resources for egg donors and recipient parents that are available?
Yes. So we see ourselves playing a really big role in the, you know, recipient or intended parent side, in that sometimes people come to us and they've like just found out that they need donor eggs, right? And that's like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to like sort of the what you're getting into, right? There's education around the cost. There's education around finding a donor. There's education on the clinical process. And then there's education about what it means to raise a donor-conceived child who ultimately grows into a donor-conceived adult. And the research that I mentioned before, you know, how do you raise a donor-conceived child? How do you, you know, we don't believe egg donation is like a one-and-done transaction, right? Where like you just get the eggs and then you get a baby and it's over.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it needs to be at the forefront of every conversation you ever have with your child, or that it needs to be a big part of their identity. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that it is a part of their identity. Yeah. And so there are recommendations and best practices around how and when to have that conversation with your child. And we see ourselves as playing a role in helping that education happen with intended parents. And so, you know, we work with different psychologists and experts in the space on how to share that information in a way that feels thoughtful and empathetic, knowing that everyone who comes to us is coming to us at a different part of their journey, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are, you know, have struggled for years with their fertility, whereas others are, you know, could be two gay dads who like always knew that they were going to try to have a donor conceived child, or we have single parents by choice, right? So everyone's coming from a different perspective. So our goal is to meet people where they are, but to be that like trusted resource who has been there and can help.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I think that's so amazing, because I actually didn't know there was this whole side of donor conception and the donor conceived child to kind of like really think about, because it's not talked about. Like once we're told, and I'm sure this happened to you, once someone tells you you need an egg donor, your brain just goes to like, oh, I need an egg donor. Where do I find an egg donor? I just need to find, how do I secure eggs? How do I, you know, how does that work? How does it get shipped? But I think because we're so focused on creating that embryo, that we don't think about what happens afterwards. And there's so much, and especially now emerging stuff about donor-conceived children, donor-conceived adults, and what that experience is like. And normally, and I can't say this with certainty because I haven't talked to every single agency or bank or whatever, I don't know that there are any resources for parents, at least from that side, really exploring this.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say that there aren't any. Yeah. I will say it's not a focus for a lot of them, or it doesn't seem like it's something they're putting a ton of energy into. And I think the reason for that is because, you know, this is, for so many, it is a business where the faster they can complete a transaction to give someone eggs, the better for the business. And, you know, by bringing up these questions around disclosure or how and when to tell your child. And like, I swear, I just got off a call with two incredible intended parents who are looking for their donor. We just spent, you know, over an hour talking about these things before they make a match. They've like favorited some donors, but they have not made a match. And I'm already talking to them about whether or not they want to tell their child and how they might do that and the benefits of disclosure, because those are the conversations we think need to be had before there's a match, before there is a baby. And we think the sooner we have that conversation, the sooner we like normalize the conversation around that, the less of a thing it needs to be.
Yeah. And I I think that that's how some of this is going to morph over time too, because so many people, I think, before never, because so taboo, right, for so long. And now, as you said, there are more conversations about it. So hopefully we're bringing to the surface all the potential struggles of donor-conceived people and, you know, how important it is to kind of really have these conversations about when and how to disclose and having, you know, open ID donor and what that experience would be like for the donor-conceived child. I think that's so wonderful that you guys are having that conversation up front and really putting it out there and having resources for parents to kind of go back to. Are these resources available for a period of time, or do they get them to review like at home? How does that work?
Yeah. So we have an immense amount of content on our like learn page within our website that we believe should be like always available, whether you're up at, you know, 2 a.m. thinking about this or, you know, sitting down with a partner on a Sunday afternoon, like we want you to have access to that information. So much of it is readily available on our website. We do have additional programming for intended parents like after the match so that we can help them start thinking about the next phase of what it means. Mm-hmm. And then on our Instagram, so it's @familybyco is where we have, you know, resources and content for intended parents. We host a lot of Q&As with our medical advisors on Instagram. So like highly, highly recommend following there if that's something that interests you. Mm-hmm. And we're also like always like polling our community to find out like, what do you want to know? You know, you tell us and then we will go and create content, whether it's an article or Q&A session or like an AMA with different folks that are in the fertility ecosystem. Mm-hmm. We will happily put it there. Mm-hmm.
And do you have, I know it's still somewhat early on, but do you have anything or do you have any kind of thoughts that your clients have had or, you know, intended parents are saying about this process? Are they already having some thoughts and feelings about this? I don't know if there have been any babies yet. Yeah. Have there been any babies?
So we just launched. So what's the date? Today is November 18th. Yeah. We launched on October 19th.
Okay. So no baby.
No babies yet. But I will say we have already made more, we made more matches in the first 2 weeks than we anticipated to make all year. So, and for the remainder of this year. So I'm really, really encouraged by the response. I find, you know, intended parents, I wrote this down the other day for my team because I was so excited. Someone told me that their experience so far with our company felt like, he said, the safest space for them in egg donation. And that to me was such an honor because that's the idea here, right? Like, you know, all three of us co-founders like have been through it in so many different ways, not egg donation or not, just like crazy fertility journeys. Yes. And it doesn't always feel like you're like it's coming from a safe or, you know, supported way, right? And that's really what our goal is. So we've heard great things also that like, you know, we're matching intended parents with donors. You know, someone also said that the experience had been soul crushing until she found our company and that brought me to tears, honestly, because it sucks that that's how it's felt, but I'm so happy that it doesn't have to feel like that.
Yeah. No, that's so great. I think it really is a very unique way of looking at how families can be built and look at, because from a patient standpoint, you know, from my standpoint, sometimes it does feel like I'm in this kind of like spinning like wheel of transactions, like it's another cycle and then it's this much money. And, you know, so much of it feels kind of impersonal, you know, because it you're looking at the numbers, you're looking at what you can get, like, you know, your number of eggs, number of embryos, what are the percentages, what are the chances? It feels so like very impersonal and dry. And this is a really great way of kind of connecting two people and making it really feel like what it, what I think everyone wanted it to be about was like trying to help someone expand their family to, you know, what they thought. Cause as you said, as one of your other clients have said, it is a, it can feel very soul crushing. What you intended, what you thought this experience was going to be like is nothing like what you thought it was. For intended parents to get into the space, sometimes you're thinking like, I never expected to have this conversation. Totally. I never expected to talk about, you know, needing an egg donor. And it can be really difficult to process. And when you get into the space and you don't feel like you're looking through a catalog and you feel like, we're helping each other and it's mutually beneficial. Like, you know, you get to freeze your eggs so you don't have to, or at least hopefully minimize your chance of having to go through this experience that I'm going through. And I get to expand my family. It really is. It feels very heartwarming and it feels like, oh my gosh, it really is a team effort at this point. Like it really right. feels like we're helping each other, you know?
Well, that's why our company is called Co-Fertility, right? Yeah. It's like a community and together, right? Like that you kind of need each other in this ecosystem to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of questions that popped in. One of them says that she's like, it's not a question. I'm just really excited to hear about this. So I already have people who are still stoked about this. And then the second one is, how do intended parents feel about getting less eggs from an egg retrieval with the split program?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, I think, you know, we knew that going into this. And so bringing the cost down to be less than what you would pay with a traditional agency was really important to us. But it is, you know, when you work with an egg bank, oftentimes you're getting eggs in lots of 6 to 8 eggs anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if we are working and if intended parents' physicians are working with us in terms of screening the donor up front to make sure that she is someone who's a good candidate, right? So doing the antral follicle count, testing her AMH, testing like everything under the sun to do our best to predict the number of eggs she will retrieve, right? The idea is that we're not in a scenario where you're getting fewer than, you know, 6 eggs when the cycle is split in half. Mm-hmm. However, and there are some cases where, like, you know, I have a friend who you know, froze her eggs at 31 and got 36 eggs, right? So mm-hmm. it really just depends on who the person is and, you know, what their, you know, ovarian reserve and ovarian quality looks like, right? So it will vary, but unfortunately it's not a perfect science. We just, we believe that we can be predictive up front, but again, that's where the baby guarantee comes in, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you don't and aren't able to have a baby with the eggs that you are retrieved from that first cycle, we'll either rematch you with someone else or, you know, like basically we want you to have a baby. So we get it, but hopefully that answers your question.
Yes. And then this next question is about medical and genetic screening. What are the medical and genetic screenings that you do on your donors?
Yeah. So we follow all of the ASRM guidelines, and ASRM, American Society of Reproductive Medicine guidelines for egg donation. And that is like everything from as basic to like the age criteria to the diseases and things like that, that someone might have in their medical history that could disqualify them. There's also FDA standards around that, that we also follow. And our reproductive endocrinologist medical advisors have helped us to design that screening and also help us with our donor evaluation. We then, after the like first screening, where we get all of that up front, if they are approved, we obviously meet with the donor, then they, you know, wait for their match. But once they're matched, they then do intake with the clinic that involves the genetic screening as well as other like STI screening and drug screening and all the things that need to happen up front for someone to be a real, you know, qualified, thorough egg donor. Mm-hmm. So we're not like skirting any of the requirements on that front, mm-hmm. but we work with the clinic. And then, you know, especially from the genetic front, like a big part of it is how does it work with whatever sperm is being used, right? So mm-hmm. that's why we wait until after the match for that piece of it. But we do work with clinics to make it all happen. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's also a psych eval that happens as well.
Mm-hmm. For the donor, they get a psych eval.
For the donor, and some clinics require it for the intended parents as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Not all, but some. Yeah.
Okay. Whew, we went over a lot of stuff today.
I know. I love it. I love it. Such good question.
I could totally talk about this stuff all day long.
Same.
But
I do.
Well, you're welcome to come back at any point in time to talk more about it because I could do this all day. But if there are people who are interested or they have more questions, what do they do? How do they connect with you? How do they find you guys? Yeah, how do they sign up?
Totally. So visit our website at cofertility.com. If you're specifically looking for a donor,
cofertility.com/family is where you sign up to, you know, find a match. Separately on Instagram, like I mentioned, at Family by Co. If you know someone who might be interested in participating in our split program, so, or, you know, just don't freezing their eggs in general, the Instagram account is Freeze by Co, at Freeze by Co. And then, you know, personally, I am always happy to be in touch or connect on Instagram. I'm at Lauren Mackler. That's LaurenMakler. But you can also set up time with me through our website or with our team. We are absolutely happy to connect at any point, live or over email.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for spending so much time with me today and breaking everything down and really kind of sharing this unique experience with people who are trying to expand their families and for people who are looking to freeze their eggs, because like I said, I think there's a lot, and like you said, there's a lot that needs to be changed, I think, around all of this and the conversation around it. And you guys are definitely changing that space. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing everything. Yeah. I'm so, so grateful.
Thank you. I mean, my hope is that someday the only people who need egg donors are gay dads, right? That enough women preserve their own fertility that they don't need that option someday. So
that is another conversation on another episode that I would love to have.
Part two. Like, Part two.
We'll have to talk about your egg donation or your egg freezing program next then.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And yes, hopefully we'll connect soon for more topics.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I hope you found today's episode helpful. As always, please share with anyone who may find value in our conversations. And if the mood strikes you, please feel free to donate to the podcast or leave a 5-star review so we can get more listeners to hear these stories and resources. I will have a link in the show notes along with the books that we discussed on this episode. There'll be a link to my Amazon shop. Your purchase with that link helps me offset the costs of running the podcast, so I'd be so grateful if you opted to buy any of the books we discussed on the show through that link. Thank you to everyone who is part of the 40 and Infertile community. I am so grateful for all of you, and I hope to continue bringing you more content that helps you in your quest to parenthood. If you want to have a question or topic covered in future episodes, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at 40andInfertile.